From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Cousin Adam, and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here today with...
Cousin Adam.
And with All Hallows Eve mere days away, this is our spooktacular celebration. So, in the spirit of the occasion, we're going to be discussing our favorite forms of eerie entertainment. But first, let's discuss our personal feelings about this time of year with a little version of point-counterpoint. Cousin Adam, where do you stand when it comes to Halloween, sir?
Hated it.
Ha! Nice.
I didn't used to hate it. I just... It's one of those things that my love of it as a child did not cross over into my adult years. Just for some reason, I am just... I don't care about Halloween anymore. I just don't care. I'm sorry to tell you that, but I just... It's not like I hate Halloween. It's just I don't really have any time for it, I guess. I don't know.
So you're more like...
I'm assuming you love Halloween.
Yeah. I do. But, I mean, I guess I don't have the time for it that I would like.
Yeah. I'm indifferent to it, basically.
Gotcha.
That is all.
I like Halloween... Mostly because it stimulates my imagination and it makes the things that are normally considered uncomfortable into something kind of comforting. All the things that are typically considered unsettling are suddenly celebrated. And it sort of feels like a free pass to be weird. And I've personally always felt a little more weird than normal. And so I guess it's a free pass to be normal for one day.
You know, it's funny. I never thought of it that way. And that's a great point, sir. I feel like, you know, maybe someone who's a little marginalized in society or something like that. Like you said, it's a good day that you can kind of like let your freak flag fly if you want or, you know, be someone else or like be who you feel like being on the inside. You know, that's a great point. I never really thought of it that way. But I guess maybe next year I can go into it. Having a different mindset, and maybe I'll feel a little bit differently about it. I don't know.
I support that, and you know what? It's only October 28th as we record this, so I would even say that there's still hope for this year.
Well, you know, we did have a Halloween party at my house over the weekend with some friends and stuff, and my wife made me dress up, you know, as something, because I can't come to my own Halloween party without dressing up or whatever. but I ended up doing... I ended up doing the face paint of Captain Spaulding from House of a Thousand Corpses because I needed a palette of someone who had a beard already, and I had to kind of incorporate it. So I did that, but, you know, I don't know, as an adult, I mean, you know, when I was a kid, it was great. You know, you got the free candy, you got to dress up and, like, be a superhero or something that you wanted to be. But, you know, as an adult, like, you know, I just don't like wearing a costume. Like, I feel uncomfortable and, you know, with the makeup and the face paint, it gets all itchy. So, and I guess, as an adult, I'm a little disillusioned and I find the little things that are annoying about it more than what it used to be. Because obviously I can't go around getting candy or anything like that. But, you know, maybe I'll go to more adult parties next year and do something cool.
That's fair enough. That's a great face paint choice. In your specific situation, having a beard and all.
You know what? Next year, if I go as like a Star Wars character, I'll be like into it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll be a Jedi.
Oh, yes. There you go.
Because that's what I always really wanted to be on the inside. I want to be a Jedi. There, I said it. I freaking admitted it, everybody.
Yep, everybody's heard it now. There's no taking it back.
Damn it.
Well, now that everybody knows our feelings about the holiday itself... Let's move on and discuss our favorite forms of Halloween-related entertainment from the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. Would you like to start us off?
Sure. And let me explain something real quick, just so we're good. As you know, I'm not into Halloween, so most of the Halloween-related entertainment I like is movies. So I'm going to stick with the movies, if that's okay.
Yeah, most of mine are too.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I remember a while ago we talked about like our favorite sitcoms that had, you know, Halloween.
Right.
Like really good Halloween episodes. Now, I don't like go watch these around Halloween to like get in the spirit or something, but I remember shows like, you know, Roseanne, Home Improvement, of course, The Simpsons, the quintessential Treehouse of Horrors. Those are always really cool things I remember from like when I was younger. You know, I always looked forward to those episodes when they came on, but I don't really, you know, there isn't really many TV shows in my mind that do it well. Modern Family, which is one of my favorite TV shows, does it, but that's not really like a my favorite form of Halloween entertainment per se. So I did, like we said, we picked movies. You said most of yours are too. So yeah, I'll start off 1970s. Now, I have a confession to make first. I realize there are a plethora of classic, you know, show-stopping, front-running Halloween-type horror movies that were made in the 70s, but I had to pick one that I have seen the whole way through. Okay, like start to finish.
Fair enough.
And I gotta admit, okay, I have not seen Jaws from start to finish. I have not seen the movie Alien. I have not seen Halloween. Any of those movies, like, start to finish. So I could not pick them. Like, I've seen snippets of them or out of order or whatever, but I've never seen them start to finish, which is kind of embarrassing because I know I'm kind of a cinephile myself, but I have not.
I've only seen Jaws, so we're in good company here.
Okay, good, good. So, I mean, like, I've seen parts of Alien, but I've never seen it front, you know, start to finish. So, I don't really know, like, the entire thread of the plot. So, I couldn't pick that. You know, that's, like, the top five, you know, horror slash genre movies of the 70s, you know, but I still haven't seen the whole thing. I've seen Aliens all the way through, but not Alien. So,
right.
That's good. That's good. So, we're both kind of weird about it. All right. So, anyway, my pick for the 1970s is the movie Carrie, based nice. On the novel of Stephen King.
Meet Carrie. She's the girl no one likes and everyone makes fun of. The girl who lives in that creepy house with her cruel mother. The girl with the strange power. She's about to turn a high school prom into a nightmare. If you have a taste for terror, you have a date with Carrie. Rated R.
So I liked Carrie because, well, I'm a big fan of Stephen King, and Stephen King is actually, that's his first novel. You know, he's kind of like the undisputed master of popular horror fiction. And it's his first book. And the main thing I like about the movie is that they didn't really mess around with his book too much. As you know, they did the movie The Shining based on his book, and he has historically been very adamant that he did not like the Stanley Kubrick version because it changed a lot of what he thought was right with this book, and I tend to agree with him. But in this case, Carrie was actually pretty close to what the book was like. And, of course, this was directed by Brian De Palma, you know, who is, you know, kind of tried his hand in, like, every movie genre. But what made this movie so good to me and why it's so creepy is that, like, there really isn't a lot of, like, the supernatural in it per se, but there's like this feeling of anxiety you get when you're watching this movie because you see how this girl is like bullied and how she's abused by her mother, and this whole time you just go, you know, this is not going to end well. Like, this movie is not going to end well, and you have that anxiety and that creepiness to it the whole time, and you feel bad for Carrie, but then when she snaps and goes on like her killing spree, like, you're just horrified by what's happened, you know? So like, you go from sympathizing to her to being horrified, and it's a great experience, I think, with that movie. And, you know, I think it got very many well-deserved accolades. Like, I believe Sissy Spacek was nominated for an Academy Award for her role as Carrie. But yeah, that's why I picked Carrie from the 1970s. One, because I've seen the whole movie, and two, for what I just said. So
nice. Yeah, that's a great pick. I just happen to also have seen that one, It took me quite a while. I didn't see it until early 2000s. But, yeah, it's really well made. And, you know, it's become part of the pop culture lexicon. Certain lines, like, they're all going to laugh at you. And, you know, just making references to the mind powers that Carrie has and, like, the famous image of her covered in blood. Did you mention the presence of a young Travolta?
I did not. No, I forgot he was. Yeah, he was in that. I believe he was in Christine, also the movie that was based on the Stephen King book. But yeah, and Carrie, it was kind of just like a really small part. But yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. What was your pick, sir?
The interesting thing about this particular segment of the show is that we did not reveal our picks to each other before recording this. And it's something that we like to do a lot here on Nerd Bombers to kind of, you know, kind of surprise each other on the air whenever we do like a list like this. And I think it always shakes out interestingly. And this case is no exception because my 70s pick is also something that I haven't seen. It's more of a I want to see it. And it is also based on a Stephen King novel. You got his first one with Carrie, and I have his second one with a movie from 1979 called Salem's Lot.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Ghosts, no.
Vampires?
Before the sun sets.
Don't you understand what's happening?
Before time runs out.
It's got to be rooted out. It's got to be destroyed.
While you still have a chance.
The vampires are creating vampires.
Uncover the undead.
Do you know what will happen? To you?
Based on a novel by Stephen King, fear lives in a place called Salem's Lot.
My plan for this is I don't really have a 70s one, basically, is what I'm saying. So I'm going to end up doing two for the 80s, one from the early 80s, one from the late 80s. But for this portion, I really want to see Salem's Lot. For whatever reason, I never get around to it. But it's basically about an author who returns to the town that he grew up in, only to discover that the residents are becoming vampires. Mm-hmm. And I really love, you know, 70s and kind of early 80s era for, like, spooky movies. Like, something about the way they shoot it and the way they kind of pace everything. It's so much more effective than the way things are done now with very heavy effects and things like that. And this, I saw the trailer earlier today again, and it just makes me want to watch it that much more.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. And like you said, I think it has to do with the special effects aspect of it. They had to do more actual filmmaking and have to film things to give you, like, the ambiance of the creepiness. You know, like, they can't just, like, add it in later. Or, you know, and they always had to rely on maybe it was, like, a, you know, like, a musical score. Like, look at, like, Jaws with, you know, John Williams' score to that. You know, that was as big a part of the movie as, like, the acting and the effects were, you know what I mean? So I totally get that completely.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, you know, it had to be more genuinely scary. It had to be happening for real in order to be captured on film. So there's that extra little bit of tangibility, I guess.
I agree with that. But I think you should read the book first, definitely. The book is cool because one of the characters in it actually ties in later to his Dark Tower series and becomes a very key character in a couple of the books of the Dark Tower if you ever decide you want to pick it up someday. So,
sweet, yeah. All the more reason to check out the book as well. So, with that said, I guess it's time to move on to the 80s.
Yes.
What have you picked for the 1980s?
The one and only Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Oh, no, you said it three times.
Ah! He's going to show up and be crazy.
From the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure. When two ghosts can't talk the living into leaving their house.
What's the good of being a ghost if you can't frighten people away?
They call the ghost
Beetlejuice
with the most.
Yeah! Can you be scary?
What do you think of this?
This is amazing.
Michael Keaton. Is a ghost called Beetlejuice.
I'm the ghost with the most, babe.
Rated PG. Sneak preview Saturday, March 26th.
Yeah, what can I say about Beetlejuice? I mean, this is like, you know, I wouldn't even say as far as like a cult classic, is a classic, you know? I mean, this is like vintage Tim Burton. Michael Keaton gave like an amazing performance as Beetlejuice in this, and it was really weird because he was kind of known as like a comedic actor, and that's what he played in this role. And of course, we know later on Tim Burton cast him as Batman. Everybody freaked out about it because, like, you know, they remember him from this role. But yeah, this is just great all around. I mean, the caliber of the acting and the people that were in the movie. I mean, you had a young Gina Davis, a young Alec Baldwin. Catherine O'Hara was in it. You know, it was like, I want to say it was like an early, was this Winona Ryder's first movie? I don't remember if it's their first one or not, but it was definitely an early one.
Yeah, very early one, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it was just a great story. And it was kind of, you know, of course, it involves the couple dying and, you know, they're newly dead and they're trying to haunt the house to get the people to move out of it. And, you know, the one thing I want to say about this, though, is that the special effects for this were kind of crappy. But I think it kind of added to the surrealism of like the couple being dead. You know, like these really weird, choppy stop motion special effects made it like kind of better, almost, in the sense that like I'd never say that about any other movie, I don't think, but the special effects not being up to par for the time period made it better in the movie. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it looked unsettling, and it's an unsettling theme, so it kind of goes hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, so that's why I picked Beetlejuice. I mean, I thought it was just great all around. Yeah, so that was my pick, Beetlejuice. I loved it.
Yeah, there's really no topping Beetlejuice for this type of movie, this this time of year, something you want to watch that relates to very Halloween relevant themes. And I mean, as far as like Tim Burton's work, very few things even compare to it, let alone are better than that. You know, it's another one where it's become a really deeply ingrained part of popular culture. And yeah, I think it's a fantastic movie. And I have not seen it yet this year, and I think I need to remedy that.
Yeah, I think, I know you don't get cable, but they're doing like a marathon, I want to say, on the Paramount Network. They're basically just playing it like nonstop, kind of like A Christmas Story, which I think is kind of fitting for Halloween. But, well, you know, it's weird too. You could pick a lot of Tim Burton movies to kind of tie into the Halloween theme too. I mean, there's like The Nightmare Before Christmas, which is, you know, Jack Skellington. I mean, that's the whole thing is Halloween. And, you know, like Corpse Bride, even Batman could be considered Halloween. Because, I mean, how many people dressed up as Batman when that came out? You know, I mean, that was one of my first costumes I just had to be was Batman. But I just picked that one because I think it just kind of fit.
Yep. I couldn't agree more about Beetlejuice. But as far as my pick for the 80s goes, like I said before, I'm going to come at you with two from the 80s. The first one is from 1983. And it is actually a Disney movie called Something Wicked This Way Comes.
And wash away your troubles.
For every heart, there exists a wish.
You ever play the numbers, Mr. Holloway?
Me? Never take risks.
For every soul, there burns a desire.
Boy, he's up.
Always was.
It smells to me like we're going to have visitors.
But never whisper your dreams, for someone might be listening.
And I can make you young again.
Ray Bradbury's fantasy tale of light and darkness is getting closer. Something wicked this way comes.
The director escapes me, but it stars Jonathan Pryce and Jason Robards. And you know what? I've accidentally sort of, all of my picks seem to have this theme in common where it basically centers around a quiet suburban town sort of becoming taken over or having like weird things happen. And you know, this is going to continue that. This basically is about a small Midwestern town. I think it's set in Illinois, and they are kind of celebrating, you know, the harvest and autumn. And then a kind of a villainous carnival rolls into town and makes promises basically to grant wishes, but there is a heavy price. And the funny thing is, it's called the Pandemonium Carnival, and the owner of the carnival's name is Mr. Dark. So it seems like the townspeople maybe could have figured that out, you know, like maybe something bad is going to happen here, but, you know, apparently Midwestern people operate at a slower pace. So basically the main
attraction... They're just more forgiven.
Yeah, absolutely. The main draw of the carnival under the surface was basically temptation. And it kind of offered you, you know, something that you wanted. And it centered around the carousel, which when you rode it would either age you or, you know, make you younger again. And for a Disney movie, it was actually pretty dark and genuinely disturbing in some parts. And I first saw it and became aware of it as a kid, maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 years old. It was on TV, like on a Sunday afternoon or something. And I just kind of became fascinated by it. And for years, I didn't even know what it was called. I didn't know if I actually even really saw it. It was one of those things where you're like, man, I wish I could find that out. And I don't know, I stumbled across it years later and I bought it and I've had it ever since. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty awesome. I've never seen the movie, but I have read the book, Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is actually probably one of the most well-known books by Ray Bradbury, apart from Fahrenheit 451. But yeah, that was from his brain. And yeah, I do. Yeah, that's, you know, like what you described is basically the plot of the book as well. So that's a great pick. That's definitely... up in the creepiness factor of Halloween. And you're right, it was kind of a odd choice for Disney, you know, especially at that time, because I mean they were all, you know, they were basically just family entertainment at that point. And it, you know, it kind of is like a scary family oriented movie, but it is kind of on the dark side, I think. So yeah, that's a good pick.
Yeah, I've liked it for years. And actually, the Roger Ebert review has said something like it's one of the rare movies that not only like does the book justice, but actually manages to capture the same tone as the writing of the book. And I guess that's because Ray Bradbury was involved with writing the script as well.
Okay.
But at the end of filming, I guess he had a falling out with the director and they let him go and there was a bunch of reshoots. But for the most part, it is sticks true to his vision.
Yeah, that's good. Wow. So what was your other 1980s pick?
We're going to fast forward to 1989 for another similarly themed movie called The Burbs.
Walter's dog just took a dump on Rumsfeld's lawn again.
Tom Hanks loves The Burbs. Oh. It's tree-lined streets.
Morning, Walter!
A paper on every doorstep. And a couple of human sacrifices in the house next door.
Ray, this is Walter.
No! The Burbs.
Hey, honey, I think we should move.
Rated PG. Starts Friday at theaters everywhere.
Oh, The Burbs. I forgot about The Burbs. Great choice. Okay.
Yep, this is, you know, Tom Hanks and Carrie Fisher, the people who portray the main couple in the movie, directed by Joe Dante of Gremlins fame, so no stranger to mixing horror and comedy a little bit there.
Yep.
Basically, the movie is about, you know, kind of a normal family, which is the one who Tom Hanks and Carrie Fisher play with their kid. But they live on a street surrounded by wacky neighbors who kind of become fascinated by and eventually obsessed with the new people on their street. A family of kind of eccentric foreigners named the Klopex. They just kind of move in and like dark things begin to happen. And, you know, the Tom Hanks family is convinced that everybody else is exaggerating until, you know, the point of no return, basically. And everything kind of goes to hell, literally.
Yeah, you know, that is, I think, one of like the forgotten Tom Hanks movies. You know, like when you think of Tom Hanks, you kind of skip over The Burbs for some reason. I don't know why, because it's like a great film, you know.
Right.
But yeah, the two scenes that always have stuck out for me in that movie was when Like the Beehive let loose when he went up to like knock on their door, went to like to introduce himself or whatever, and they were getting chased around by the bees and had to get hosed down. And also the scene where like he thinks he hears something in the middle of the night, and he looks out the window, and like the one guy, it looks like he's digging a grave in the backyard, and he's just kind of like, huh? And like he's kind of confused by it, but I don't know why, but that those two were always the scenes that stuck out for me in that movie. But yeah, that was a great movie. I completely forgot about that when I was thinking of my picks, you know, and like I just couldn't.
That's all right, I got you covered.
Yeah, you did. Like I said, it's the forgotten Tom Hanks movie, you know. It's just...
Not anymore. Not once our nationwide audience gets to listen to this episode.
Yeah, the Netflix viewership of that movie is going to go skyrocketing, so
you're
be ready.
You're welcome, folks.
I want to say, wasn't Corey Feldman in that movie also?
He was. Okay. You know, you could say a young Corey Feldman, but in terms of his acting career, it's sort of like the middle stage of his acting career.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it was after The Goonies, because it was 89, so, yeah, and before, now, was that before The Lost Boys or after The Lost Boys? I don't know. Same time?
That was after The Lost Boys, actually.
Okay, so that would have been a pretty decent Halloween pick, too.
Absolutely. But, you know. And another decent one that you could kind of slyly mention here is an earlier time Corey Feldman worked with Joe Dante was on The Gremlins.
Right, which is probably why he was in that movie.
Most likely.
Yeah. He's like, I need Corey. Get me Corey. Anyway.
With that, we will follow Corey into the 90s.
Yeah, we'll get him. With Corey Feldman in Scream. Oh, shoot. I just gave away my pick.
He's got to be in there
don't
somewhere.
Call. Yeah, he's probably in there somewhere. Don't Call It a Comeback, but it's Wes Craven's Scream is my 1990s pick.
Great. Great choice.
Were you shocked by that pick at all?
Not really. I didn't see it coming, but it makes all the sense in the world.
I couldn't think of one single 90s horror film or Halloween-related thing. Maybe, like, Hocus Pocus, but I'm, like, probably one of the few people that hate that movie. I said don't call it a comeback because Wes Craven, it's kind of a weird... I picked this for... I'll explain why I picked this for a few reasons. Okay. So the first big thing about this movie that I found awesome was they killed their, like, probably most famous actress they got for the movie, like, within the first 10 minutes.
Right.
Like, kind of didn't expect that to happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, Drew Barrymore's in this. Cool. Now she's dead. So you're like, wow. So that was cool. But, you know, it's so weird because he kind of did this movie as like an homage to like the slasher films, but like he was part of that with, you know, like his earlier movies and like with Freddy Krueger and, you know, and all those movies that he did. It was just kind of weird that he would make a movie that was an homage to his own movies. And along with doing that, he kind of had, it was almost like a fourth wall break in the whole movie because the people in the movie are like making fun of like all these horror movie tropes and like, you know, the stereotypes of the horror movie.
Right.
And it's kind of how the movie played out. And it was like really almost like ingenious that he decided to do it that way. You know, I mean, it wasn't quite a fourth wall break, but it was like pretty close to it, you know? And also that's the only thing I remember from the 90s is why I picked that. So,
You know, I actually, I went back and forth myself between a couple things, but I don't really know them that well. Like one of them I consider was The Craft, which I believe is another Neve Campbell vehicle.
Yep.
You know, it kind of fits, but it's not where my heart is. I instead decided to stick with things that really appeal to me and with my unintentional theme of suburban towns with dark secrets. And I went with a TV series that started in 1991 called Erie, Indiana.
Erie, Indiana, day 45. I knew my hometown was going to be different from where I grew up in New Jersey. But this is ridiculous. Nobody believes me. but Erie is the center of weirdness for the entire planet. Item, a guy that looks suspiciously like Elvis lives on my paper route.
Thank you, little paper boy.
Item, Bigfoot eats out of my trash. Item, a bizarre housewife cult in town has been sealing up their kids in giant rubber kitchenware so they don't age. And now, just when I thought things couldn't get any worse, I discovered that in Erie, even man's best friend is up to no good. When I try to tell this to my family, they just think I'm weird. Better weird than dead.
This was essentially like The X-Files for kids mixed with The Twilight Zone. Like I said, it debuted in September of 91 and ran for only one season on NBC. And basically the success of Twin Peaks the year before is likely responsible for the network even being interested in making this kind of show. As well as the trend in movies at the time about boring suburbs with secret weirdness becoming popular. Thanks to, like we said, we just talked about The Burbs, but also two different Johnny Depp vehicles, a movie called Crybaby, and from the year before, Edward Scissorhands. They all came out within 2 years of Erie, Indiana's debut. So, basically, it's a kid from New Jersey whose family moves away to Indiana to give their kids a quieter life away from the big city. And it's really boring at first, and then strange things start to happen. So he has like one normal friend, and they kind of go around investigating all the strange happenings. And it's kind of like The Twilight Zone, like I said, in the sense that it's got a different story focus on each episode. You know, a different kind of lesson being taught throughout each one. And it's really inventive for the time, and you know, I saw it again when I was about 9 or 10, and it just freaking stuck with me. And for years, I was just like, man, I wish I could see that again. And Fox Kids actually ended up rerunning it in the late 90s, and it became so popular then that they made a new spinoff series called Erie, Indiana, The Next Dimension or something like that, which also was only a one-season show. And yeah, to this day, it's got a really big, really strong cult following, and it's perfect if you want to watch it for this time of year.
You know, that's weird, because I remember, like, seeing commercials and stuff for that show, but I never watched it. So, like, I have no idea what it was about, so that's actually pretty cool.
The DVDs have been out of print for years, but Amazon Prime recently started, they uploaded the whole series, so you can check that out on there, and yeah, it's got, different plot. It deals with, like, Bigfoot and UFOs, and there's the pilot episode, actually, coincidentally enough, is directed by Joe Dante, and it's about a set of twins who never age. Their mother is, like, a Tupperware woman, but it's called Foreverware, and every night she tucks them into their, like, plastic coffins to keep them young, so it's pretty great.
Huh. That sounds pretty crazy. but yeah, I can see where it's kind of like the parallel, you know, to the X-Files. I remember watching the X-Files because my dad really liked that show, but that some of those like kind of creeped me out, you know, when I watched them, because, you know, it was on late, it was dark out, and I was just like, yeah, I don't want to watch this anymore. But I did, you know, explore the show later on. But yeah, that's a pretty good pick. And that'll do it, folks. Until next time.
I have been your friend Claude, and for Cousin Adam, happy Halloween, everybody.